Many of you know that we've decided to do in season 10, which is going to be almost the whole year of 2026, maybe beyond, we've decided to really break down the 8 limbs of yoga. But before we can get started with that, we have to look at the theoretical lens of Indian philosophy. And I think this is important because sometimes we see that our field of therapeutic yoga and or yoga therapy is being broken down into tools and techniques. Use this breathing technique to calm someone down. Use that asana to get this effect in the body. Use this type of meditation for this result. And when we just break it down to the tools and the techniques, we're actually missing the goodness. And I would say we're cutting off the tree from its roots. So one of my goals in 2026 with the podcast is to help educate, inspire, and bring us back to our roots and remember, what is the function of yoga? What are we really doing with yoga? Not that calming people down and making them feel peaceful and tranquil isn't important. Yes, that is. But really, what we're looking at is something so much deeper. And if we can remember that and keep the lens through which yoga, yoga therapy, therapeutic yoga, if we can keep the lens to remember what it is we're doing here, I think we will keep our tree nourished and connected to its roots, and it will live much longer instead of being a holiday tree that comes in the house and dies after 4 or 5 weeks. We will have this tree for many, many generations to come. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. My name is Amy Wheeler, and I am your host. Today, we're going to do a solo episode with me, and we're still going deeply into the 8 limbs of yoga this year. So let's go ahead and get started. So in these teachings, I will be using some Sanskrit. I try not to overuse it because I know it can be a little bit overwhelming for some, but I do feel strongly that we cannot forget the language that this comes from. And the main reason is because each Sanskrit word has 4 or 5 different meanings depending on the context. So we can't really just say this is the meaning of that word and translate it to English. We actually have to see that word in context to everything else to understand. So for example, today we're going to be talking about the chitta. There's the chit and there's the chitta mind field. So we really have to see these words in context, what comes before them, what comes after them, to understand the meaning. You can't really give it just an English translation that works in all the different contexts. So we've talked in previous episodes about this idea of the chitta mind field, which is encompassed through the manas mind, the ahankara mind, the buddhi mind. I went into great detail about that about a month ago. And the name of that last one is called the mind-body system, chitta field, and the nervous system. But today I want to take this a little bit further. So if you're listening to this for the first time, let's just quickly go back over what does the manas mind encompass, what is ahankara encompass, and what is the buddhi mind encompass. So when we look at the manas mind, we're looking at that part of your mind that's kind of interfacing with the world. It's seeing, it's hearing, it's tasting, it's smelling, it's touching and feeling all the different goodness out there. It's you coming into this human body and having an experience with the world. And the manas mind is kind of sorting through it, enjoying some things, not enjoying other things. So you can kind of think of it as a computer processor, kind of getting the data in, determining what stays, what goes, what do we remember, all of that kind of thing. And that's something that we all need. Sometimes the manas mind gets out of balance and we get very overwhelmed and distracted and we can't focus. Ideally, if our manas mind was in really good balance, we would find external objects to focus on. We would be able to maintain our focus on those objects. They would be ethical and they would be within our dharma. Like if you're a yoga teacher or a yoga therapist, your mind would go deeply into the studies of yoga. Your Manas mind would be able to connect with that, but it would be very dharmic and very ethical. Now, something that's a little deeper that's driving our Manas mind is called the Ahankara. And the Ahankara is a good thing, and it can also be a not so good thing. So all these parts of the mind can be used for positive things and maybe not so great things. So the Ahankara is the part of you that says, I must survive. I have to survive. And I know a lot of people in our community are in that kind of mode of, oh my gosh, how am I going to survive? How am I going to pay for things? How am I going to nourish myself? How am I going to have shelter and food and reliable transportation? So the Ahankara is very concerned about that. And that's a good thing because we all need to survive. However, the Ahankara can get very wrapped up in that, where that's the only thing it can think about. It doesn't think about joy. It doesn't think about life purpose. It doesn't think about connection. It's just survival. Right? So that's not such a good thing. Also, the Ahankara can become very greedy and start to think that it needs more and more and more. And it can start hoarding resources, not sharing. You know, ideally, as we got resources, they would pass through us and we would pass them on. But some are not doing that. Some are hoarding for fear of, you know, safety, security, wanting to have something for their family, next generation. You get the idea. So the Ahankara is a good thing. It helps us survive, but it can also be, you know, a little bit overboard and overzealous. And that's where we have to keep it in check. If you go a little deeper, now we have the Buddhi mind. And this is the part of the mind that has a little bit more discernment. Some people call it intellect, but I don't really love that word because that makes me think about someone who's like thinking, thinking, thinking. This isn't thinking. This one is feeling. This one is being. This one is intuiting. The Buddhi mind is the part of you that knows what's dharmic and knows what's not dharmic. That when you quiet your mind down, you can really listen to yourself and see what's aligned for you, see what's meant for you, see what meaning and purpose your life have, and how that fits into the bigger picture of creation. The Buddhi mind knows right from wrong, not based on context or biases, but rather what is good for humanity, what is good for all of us. The Buddhi mind is very close to your Purusha, your witness, the seer, the observer, the one's part of you that doesn't have so many preferences and biases and intolerance and agendas and all that stuff. So this observer or this witness is very close to Buddhi. So if we kind of look at it from the part of us that's closest to our most sacred place, our Purusha, our seer, our witness, then would be Buddhi, then would be Ahankara, then would be Manas mind. And you can see that all of those are encompassed inside of you. And the thing is, which one are you going to use correctly, incorrectly? Are you going to let one dominate more than the other? We really want to have the discernment about when to go into deep intuition and close to spirit in our Buddhi mind, and when we actually need to use our Manas mind to make really everyday activity decisions and like get things going, right? So all of this is important. It's not like one is good and one is bad, but the question maybe is, how do we use it correctly? How do we know which part of our mind to use at which times so that we suffer less? And that's really the context of all of this. How are we going to suffer less? So when we look at the eight limbs of yoga, what we're really looking at is a very small part of Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. It's something very applied, very practical. And it's saying, how can the eight limbs help us to decide when to use the type of mind that needs to interface with the world, when to use the mind that says, I will survive or I need to survive versus this is not a survival moment? And when will we use the eight limbs to help us go deeper and more subtle and internal and experience the Buddhi mind that is very, very close to our deepest observer or witness? So, So when we look at these eight limbs of yoga, it's so interesting because they're here to help us figure out how to use each of these types of minds. And they start with social disciplines, the yamas. How can we connect with one another? And I love this because if our connections with one another, our communications, our non-harming, all of this stuff, if we're not able to connect socially, nothing else can happen. And you know, that's a little bit hard for some of us that are more introverted, highly sensitive, maybe even neurodivergent. It's kind of hard, like, oh, that's the first one. Yeah, it's the first one. We have to work on it, even if it's painful. It's not like we can just skip over that and say, I'm a shy person. I think I'll go to number two. You know, how we show up in the world as humans is to recognize who we are in relationship to others. Yoga is relational. I say it's a relational science. If we can't be in relationships with ourselves and with others, we can't even start the process. So there's a lot to go into that. We'll spend a whole month on the yamas and how to be with others socially. But I think that's so interesting that social principles come before the niyamas. How do I take care of myself? That's number two. How do we take care of others? And then how do I take care of myself? Even with taking care of myself, it's going to rotate back around so that I'm taking care of myself so I can be a service to others. So that is assumed in the eight limb path and assumed in this idea of the chitta mind field, that your whole goal is going to be of service and take care of yourself and be of service and take care of yourself. Those are the basics of it, right? That's our foundation. And you can already see how does taking care of others impact our manas mind or our ahankara or our buddhi mind. Think through that. You could even stop the tape for a moment and think, oh, I'm giving too much. I'm feeling completely overwhelmed, or I'm giving too much because I want other people to love me and I want to feel safe, or I'm giving too much and therefore I never even get to my buddhi mind. I'm so overwhelmed. Or you could say, wow, I'm actually being pretty selfish and I'm not giving and I'm only worried about myself and I'm only taking care of I, me, mine. And therefore, I really need to let go of so much ahankara, I must survive. Or I need to spend more time trying to quiet down so I can listen to my deeper heart and how I can be of service to others. Same thing with the niyamas, your personal disciplines. Some of you are so much being of service that you're not taking care of yourself. You're not regulated. You're not safe. You're not able to provide for yourselves. And I say that as someone who has been doing this for 25 years and sometimes not able to provide for herself. So it's not a judgment. It's just a fact that sometimes we have to go figure out how to take care of ourselves before we can be of service to others. And if we are taking care of everyone else and never taking care of ourselves, never putting ourselves first, it's impossible to get to that buddhi mind and be very close to Purusha because we are so worried all the time and we are having a lot of conflict within about how to provide for ourselves. Now, if we go to the third limb of yoga, we're looking at asana, the postures. And many of you know that originally, as they talked in Patanjali's Yoga Sutra about the postures, it wasn't the gymnastics and the calisthenics that we know today. It was, can you sit comfortably in a chair or with your legs crossed on the floor in preparation for breathing exercises, pranayama, and meditation? That's all it was. So this whole obsession that we have with asana, as wonderful as it feels for so many of us, it really wasn't part of this original philosophical lens where, you know, we're looking at the manas mind, the ahankara, the buddhi mind. So I was very surprised to hear one say that much of yoga therapy has become yin yoga. And nothing against yin yoga, but I thought, wow, that's so interesting. Of all the things that are happening in yoga and yoga therapy, How did we lose this focus on the cleansing of the mind and getting close to Purusha? I hope we didn't. Maybe I should say that. But if we look at asana as a form of getting our bodies prepared to sit comfortably for periods of time to do some breath work, some pranayama, regulated breathing, they say the pranayama is extending the prana, pranayama. How do we extend the prana, both for longevity, but also for health? And knowing that the extension of prana requires that we create space inside of ourselves for the prana to flow smoothly in a refined way, which is going to help us get back to buddhi mind, get back to that witness, get back to that observer. So can we think of pranayama as kind of a cleanser of the mind and more, and think of it as a way to get back to our deeper self, come home, get quiet, go within, and observe and witness our lives as Purusha does. Now, after pranayama, we say pratyahara, the next limb of yoga, is a result of pranayama. So when you do a lot of pranayama, the result is that your senses come inward and help you connect deeply to go be with buddhi mind, to go get closer to Purusha. So pratyahara is taking the senses from their outward senses, from the manas mind that's connecting through sight, sound, hearing, touch, smelling, tasting, and bringing those senses inward to have a new food, a new type of nourishment, which is closer to the buddhi mind. I used to laugh and I would call it Purusha juice. So really, pratyahara is not something we do. It's something that happens as a result of a lot of pranayama. I would say our modern practices of yoga nidra can have a really, really strong effect on pratyahara. Oftentimes, even within yoga nidra, we're doing a lot of breath work. But I really do think yoga nidra can help us settle down to come back home to self, to become the witness or the observer of our lives a little more often, even if it's for 15 or 20 minutes and kind of a little reset to get back into your day. Now, the last three limbs, after we've drawn our attention inward, after we've done all this breath work, now we're going into dharana, dhyanam, and samadhi. These are three parts of meditation, like beginning meditation, middle of meditation, end of meditation. And each one is important, and not all of us will get to each one. So when we look at the sixth limb of yoga, dharana, that is the beginning of meditation. That is getting your mind to focus. Many of us have trouble with this. We have too much going on in our lives where our minds are jumping all over. They want to look at the cell phone. But to even get it to concentrate for, let's even say, 12 seconds is a beginning. Focus your attention. That's the beginning step to really getting closer to the buddhi mind and closer to connecting deeply with Purusha. The second part of meditation, dhyana, some people say dhyanam, and this is where your mind has become very focused and somewhat absorbed in meditation. I always say dharana is 12 seconds and dhyana is 12 times 12, 144 seconds, if you wanted to kind of put it in a timeline, that you kind of start to lose your sense of time or space. You start to really, really deeply connect internally to yourself. You start to get a glimpse of the buddhi mind. And for many of us, when we came to our first yoga class, we got that glimpse. We got in there for 2 minutes and we were like, oh my gosh, is this what enlightenment feels like? It's probably not enlightenment, but it sure feels good. It is dropping down into that buddhi mind. So for a lot of us, those first tastes of dhyanam were just so potent and so strong. And then the third part of our meditative process or experience is samadhi. Samadhi. Sama, balance of ti, di, of yourself. This is where you have really become deeply absorbed in your deeper self. And in fact, there may be no separation between you and out there. There is a oneness that is experienced. And again, I say 12 times 12 times 12, whatever, however many seconds that ends up being, but you stay in there a little bit longer and you really experience the Buddhi mind. You experience a taste of what it means to be the witness, the observer of your life. And even within samadhi, there's at least seven levels, if not more, of kind of merging and absorption. And so you can see, even if you get a taste of samadhi, that's not the end of the story. You're not enlightened. You had a taste of samadhi. Let's take just a little pause and talk about something that's really exciting. There's a new book coming out in spring 2026 called Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health. It's authored by Amy Wheeler, myself, and Marlisa Sullivan. We've been working really hard on this book for about 18 months, and now it's scheduled for release in spring 2026. This text will bring together philosophical foundations of yoga, emerging research in neuroscience, and evidence-informed methods for applying these teachings in clinical and community settings. The book is designed for healthcare providers, yoga teachers, yoga therapists, educators, and really anyone seeking to clearly understand the why of why yoga works and the how, the mechanism underneath why yoga works. Your purchase of this book will help to advance the field of yoga therapy, and it will support the continued development of resources like this podcast, the Yoga Therapy Hour. And we hope it will serve both you and your clients alike. So please keep an eye out for Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health by Amy Wheeler and Marlisa Sullivan, coming out through Routledge Press in 2026. All right, let's get back to the episode. So when we look at the last three limbs of yoga, dharana, dhyana, samadhi, those three things work together. Some days we have a little more concentration. Sometimes we feel a little bit deeply connected. Other times we feel completely absorbed. If we're not able to go that deeply, we can stay back with pratyahara, pranayama, asana, niyamas, yamas. I mean, there's so many things on this path we can really focus our time and attention on. But really what my main goal today was to help you see that the eight limbs of yoga are one tiny part of chapter two of Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. We actually make them a bigger deal than they are, but they're so popular, I thought they'd be good to talk about. And I wanted you to see the overall big picture. Like, what are we doing with the eight limbs of yoga? Why are we doing the eight limbs of yoga? It's to get you closer to your deepest, sacred, precious self and your witness self, the part of you that doesn't have all the opinions and the biases and the agendas and the insecurities and the too much confidence, that part of you that isn't worried about survival, that part of you that isn't distracted all over the place, that part of you that feels at peace, that sees the big picture, that part of you that has more patience, more discernment. That's the Buddhi mind getting closer and closer to the witness. So these eight limbs of yoga are really about that. And when we put that in context, I just want us to all look at the yoga world and what's going on. I want you to look at our organizations. I want you to look at how we market. I want you to look at what's happening on Facebook. I want you to look at your interactions with your students and your teachers. I want to look at how we are in this together and how are we balancing this idea of everything from social justice and wanting to get out there and be of service to others, because we're really doing this. That's why the yamas are first. And how do we also do that from the place of the observer and the witness? That's really, you know, connecting with that deeper self every single day and getting calm inside and being with yourself and being with your Purusha and then taking that out into the world. It will make you a very refined version of yourself who has a lot of discernment and can really see all the things that are happening. In the meantime, maybe we're not all quite there yet. Maybe we're stuck in the Manas mind, completely distracted. I know I've been there for several weeks with all that's happening in the world, especially here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in February and January of 2026. It's been quite a ride here. But I did notice my mind was so into the Manas mind. It was just completely externally focused on all the news and the events and the stuff and the people and the conversations. And when I realized that was what was happening, I was like, oh my gosh, I've completely gotten away from being with my deeper self, my buddhi mind. And so I pulled in, I changed some habits, and I decided to get back to my practice first thing in the morning and my prayers and really pull inward. Knowing that that's the only place that I can truly be of service to the world. That if I'm coming from that place, I will be a much better version of myself to be able to make a difference with discernment. So I hope you have enjoyed this little kind of framing of the upcoming season. We'll continue to frame it because, again, without the framing, what are we doing here? We have no North Star, if you will. We have no tree that has roots. We're just doing tools and techniques, and that's not enough. We really do need to know the water that we swim in and what are the big goals. Where are we going together as a yoga community? Thank you so much for listening today. We'll have more of the same next week, and I'm always open to listening to your comments and your thoughts, your critiques, and feel free to contact us here at the Yoga Therapy Hour. And we're just so happy that you're part of our community. Thanks for being here. We'll talk soon. Thank you for being a listener of the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. We have done over 200 episodes, and we have had over 200,000 downloads. And we hope that in some small way, we have supported you mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. If you'd like to support the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast in 2026, there's several meaningful ways you can do so. First, you can become a member of our Patreon community and donate as little as $5 a month to keep the podcast going. Your contribution helps us to sustain the depth and quality of conversations on the podcast. A second option is that you become an Optimal State mobile app member for both Android and iPhone. Again, this is about $5 a month, and we're going to start providing a lot of amazing content on our mobile app in 2026. We'll definitely want you to be part of that community. We also have a book coming out called Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health. This book will be published by Routledge Publisher in spring 2026. It's written by Amy Wheeler and Marlisa Sullivan. We hope you'll consider purchasing this book when it comes out in the spring of 2026. Again, the name is Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health by Wheeler and Sullivan. For those of you who are seeking advanced training in therapeutic yoga or in yoga therapy, please consider checking out the programs at Notre Dame of Maryland School of Integrative Health. We have a MS in yoga therapy, and we also have a post-master's degree therapeutic yoga for licensed healthcare providers that's starting in the fall of 2026. In addition, we have a comprehensive Ayurveda certificate program also geared towards licensed healthcare providers. Each one of these programs is a pathway designed to support healthcare professionals and yoga teachers and yoga therapists who are ready to integrate these teachings into clinical, education, and community settings. All right, thanks for listening and thanks for supporting the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.